Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me this evening is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. As Chad weeps and waits for the day when my giant Christmas tree shall once again adorn my apartment.
Seriously, y'all, it like takes up a whole freaking quarter of his apartment. Yet he insists on doing it every year.
Yes, I have my inner Clark Griswold must come out.
Yes, not lying, not lies.
So, The Nutcracker in the Four Realms is a very beautiful kids movie.
Did you see it?
I did.
Okay, I saw it too.
What do you think, Joe? What do you think of what Joe did?
I really want to know. I really want to know who shot what and how this all worked out, because it seems like it was an amicable decision between the two that they would share directorship for this. And as far as I could tell, just watching it, there's only like one scene that I knew for sure was like, that happened the second go around. I can tell. But it was just that one scene. Overall, I thought the movie was fine. My barometer for movies I take my daughter to is really low. It's like, do I fall asleep? No. Okay, it's good.
Which is the same standard you have for Transformers movies.
Yes. And the last three have failed that. And the first of the three, this is before I started falling asleep in movies. Like, I'm in my old man phase. I fall asleep easy. But that one, I was in my prime, and it put me to sleep. So that's how terrible all this is. It held my attention the whole way. I didn't think it was anything better than fine, but fine is good.
Especially for Disney, who you know, can afford to just put a good movie out there every now and then.
Yeah, I want to see how much this movie cost to make, because it doesn't look like it's going to make much of the box office.
No, finished second this weekend by, what, $15 million, I think?
I don't even know what it made this weekend. Well, I just know Bohemian made, what, 20?
50.
50? Okay. So this made about 20-ish.
30, yeah, 20, 25, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I could look all this up, but I refuse to put my phone in the pocket.
Yeah, well, Queen, the Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody, which has been besieged by very angry people telling gossip to the Hollywood Reporter to try and bash Bryan Singer, who will somehow once again get a job very quickly, is, you know, interesting. For a movie that got killed, and we mean killed by every major reviewer that we know of, as being a revisionist history film in a way that is not slanted toward the subject, which is very weird. Most times when you get a biopic, you are slanted in favor of your subject. In this case, the bandmates came out a little bit ahead. What were the totals?
51 and 20. So Bohemian had 51, Nutcracker had 20. There's no production budget on Nutcracker on box office.
That's easily in the $100 million, giving all the CGI and the extra reshoots and the amount of money you had to pay Joe Johnston to come in and finish things up. And you've got a cast that includes Keira Knightley and Morgan Freeman. You know.
And I forgot she was in this until she showed up. I'm like, oh, yeah, she is in this.
It's a nice little paycheck for her. I mean, she's not going to be in the conversation for her role in the Colgate or whatever, the period piece film that's out there that's not done by Joe John, that's not done by Joe Wright, but should be. She's getting really high praise for it, but she's not going to get nominated because she's nowhere in the conversation. But yeah, it was nice to see her in these kind of, frizzy outfits and
I was kind of
doing the Disney thing.
Granted, the only thing outside of, if you want to call Phantom Menace, seeing her in a role, I've only really seen her in the Pirates movie. So to see her like this big, this bubbly, frizzy thing, like, I would have never made you like that. But that just goes to show you, I haven't seen that much of you.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And she, Begin Again, is that movie that she did with Ruffalo, which is really good. Shows some of that, outward personality. She's great. She's awesome. Just that she's constantly going to be stuck as the period piece girl, which is just...
That's right, yeah.
just not really a winning formula for your career, which is why you enjoy those big fat paydays when they come along, like, you know, going back to do another Pirates movie that no one saw. So, I mean...
But she's only in it at the end, right?
Right. And, yeah. And, you know, the... You know, it's Disney. Again, Disney has money, and, you know, she's in their good, you know, she's in their good graces. And,
yeah, know. I mean, they call you go running. I did not realize until after I saw the movie that the main little girl in this movie is also the little Twilight baby, mm-hmm. the literal Twilight baby in the last few movies.
Which makes me feel old.
Oh, I just saw an article today that the first one is about to celebrate 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole bunch of something.
I mean, we're not too far off from Hunger Games. I mean, come on now.
That's from Hunger Games. Came out a couple years after the first one, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
They all blend together.
They all do. They're like 50 Shades. They all blend together.
Yeah.
So, Chad, Kingsman The Golden Circle was a financial success enough to breed Kingsman number 3. Your thoughts on Matthew Vaughn coming back to write and direct a third Kingsman movie that will come out very quickly before this whole Disney merger thing happens and they can't produce already content anymore?
They're still going to make already content. We're betting your last $20 that they're still going to make already content. No, so they say mine. So George.
Mm-hmm.
That's how confident I am. I don't have anything against it. I finally saw The Golden Circle. Like, it is not as good as the first one. They did try to relive the Freebird scene, and it's not as good. Because I can't even remember the song that's in this one. It's an Elton John song, because he's singing it when it's
called. Rocket Man.
Is it Rocket Man?
I think it is, yeah. Again, that you're talking about a movie that came out, you know, the best part of it for me was Julianne Moore, so.
She was weird.
Yeah, that's what I like. I like Julianne Moore being weird. That's still Alice is a beautiful piece of artwork. But I mean, she's, you want to talk about a woman who's had a diverse filmography. So
yeah, like I still go back and watch stuff that I didn't realize she was in, and I watch it now. I'm like, she's in this crap. Like Lost World, I hate that movie. She's in this,
mm-hmm.
and I know everybody loves Big Lebowski. I like The Big Lebowski. Only seen it twice. First time I was really young, and then I watched it again like last year. I'm like, oh shit, that's Julianne Moore. So she just does this to me from time to time. She just is in stuff I didn't realize. And I like her and everything. So her being weird as Poppy is just something different, but it was weird. I don't make a third one. That's fine. I just kind of don't care.
I get that it made enough money. It's a franchise. It's done really well. I think where they stumbled this particular instance was they didn't put it in a good corridor. They hit a perfect corridor with that February opening for the first one. They did not. They put this one in the heart of the summer.
No, it was in September.
Yeah, it was the tail end of the summer.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, comes and fades. And that is not what you're looking for that film. I don't know. I'm interested to see what kind of a story that Vaughn wants to tell, because I know he wants to do spinoff movies and he wants to do all of this and he's got the clout with the studio to do it. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that, because I think tell me a good story. That's all I'm looking for from a good Kingsman movie. And, you know, maybe not lean so hard into, you know, the dickishness of your humor. Not making your character out to look like a complete dick would be helpful. But, you know, such is life. But, Chad, how ready are you for Bad Boys for Life?
I should look this up before I came here, but this is the third announcement that we're getting a Bad Boys 3. Granted, this is the most official one we've gotten, because this is actual video of the two stars together saying, we're doing this. Presumably, they're out somewhere where they're about to make it.
We see Mr. Bay somewhere?
No.
We see Mr. Bruckheimer anywhere?
Well, I never see Bruckheimer. I know what he looks like, but again, if I saw him, I'd be like, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure Michael Bay's not going to direct this, even though he ain't got nothing else to do. But again, this is the third time. The first time was just like Martin said it, like in the ether, and everybody's like, Martin's not doing anything. Of course he's going to say this.
The second one was the Joe Cornish script.
Yeah, they officially said, the studio said we're doing it, and they're working on scripts, and then it just kind of died. And now Will and Martin are together on social media saying, it's official, we're doing it. So this seems to be the most official thing we got going. However, this is, by my count, this is strike number three. If there's nothing that comes of this, we don't hear any move in the next 6 months, you're out. You're back. You're officially in Avatar territory. I don't believe there's a movie until I see it. Not posters, not trailers. Until there's a movie, I don't believe it's happening. So, Bad Boys, this is it. This is all you got. 6 months.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, it's... Does the world need a Bad Boys 3? And I know me and T-Bob talked about this on an episode when it was just us, and, you know, he was enthralled with the idea of the title Bad Boys for Life just being awesome. But, like, Bad Boys 2, the Cuba stuff is really fun. But, I mean, you want to talk about something that needs the Bayheim, the Bayhem? Like, that's a movie that requires the Bayhem. And to a level that is satisfactory. And the rumors that have been floating around for a while have been that they're going to pass the torch to another generation of cops, which, you know, makes sense in this particular instance. I mean, for goodness sakes, Will Smith's now 50.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it, but what kind of story are you telling? Who are you going to get to play the younger cops? And, you know, again, what's your setup and what's your story? Because if you can tell a compelling story with those characters, I'd be really interested, because I think that we are living in a time where Venom is a 90s movie. And it is making tons of money. Because people have been desperate to see Venom on screen. The question will become, have people wanted, it's been since, what, 2005? Bad Boys 2 was like 2005, 2007, somewhere up in there. I mean, you're talking about a decade since they did one.
I think it's longer than that.
Right.
It seems like I would have been in college when Bad Boys 2 came out.
Well, I was back in the time when Martin was on his high with, you know, Big Mama's House and Blue Streak, and he was the Kevin Hart of his time.
2003,
yeah. So, see? I mean, it's been well over a decade. We're pushing two now. I mean...
So, my thing with it is, I didn't need Bad Boys 2. I will say this about the series, because, you know, Venom is a 90s movie. I will say they progressed from a 90s movie to a early aughts movie, because it is very early aughts. But my thoughts on Bad Boys 2 is it's fine until you get the Cuba stuff. And then once you get to the Cuba stuff, it is pure Batum, because none of that makes sense. So you're telling me these two cops are going to infiltrate a country that we can't even go in and go blow up a compound to take somebody that got kidnapped without the feds or anybody else involved? Ain't no military, no nothing. These two dudes gonna go over there and do that.
Without starting an international incident.
Yes! And so, like, and that is all part of that early art stuff, because like, when I think of that part, I think of, like, Mission Impossible 2, which is very much early arts, and people make fun of that for the, you know, the doves and the slow motion and all that. That's what...
John
Woo. That's what Bad Boys 2 is. So, I forget what happens in the first part, because that last part is so, like, jarring and out of place that's my image of Bad Boys 2. So, Bad Boys 3, giving them the benefit of the doubt that they progressed the series into more of feeling more of a movie of this time, that could be good, but I don't need it.
I think, and the question too remains, because we have not seen Will Smith do very much post-Suicide Squad. The jury is still out on his box office appeal at this stage in his life. I mean, you know, he was on a Tom Cruise-like losing streak there for a while. And he's now bringing himself out of it, or brought himself out of it with the paycheck from Suicide Squad. But, I mean, we haven't really seen him even take some Oscar bait role somewhere. I mean, he's been very quiet. And to do this at 50 years old is, you know, a risk. And I'm just interested to see how it ends up. Because, you know, are people still going to show up for a Will Smith movie?
Well, this is kind of cheating, but his next big movie is Aladdin.
That's cheating because it's people have a fervor to see that, and I'm agreeing with Jim that we'll get our first looks at everything after the first of the year, and a lot will depend on that because people have such an affinity for that movie, but also because they have an affinity for Robin Williams's performance as Genie. And he's big, and he's blue, and he's fast-talking, and he's funny. And, you know, we've seen Will Smith in fish movie that they did with Martin Scorsese and...
Shark's Tale?
Shark's Tale.
He's got another one that's coming out this year, too. It's him and Spider-Man, Tom Holland. It's an animated movie. He gets turned into a pigeon. He's a spider, he gets turned into a pigeon.
Somebody made money off that pitch.
Yes, yes. If you ever feel disappointed in life, just realize people are making money off of stuff like that. But so the Aladdin thing for me is, yes, Disney is cheating, but the whole thing with the genie, everybody loves Robin Williams, the genie. Will Smith's genie cannot be that. It will not be that. So I think there's a certain level of intrigue as to what his genie will be. There's a very good reason we have not seen his genie. They don't want us to see his genie right now. And then they were like, when they were shooting it, they were saying that the genie's not blue. When they promote this, the poster, and when the trailer's about to drop, Will Smith himself says, "I can't wait till y'all see me blue." So it looks like he will be blue. And in the trailer, the one of the songs that you can distinctly make out is Friend Like Me, which makes it believe that that song and that version of that song is going to be in that movie. And that's a check. Will can't sing, but that's a genie song. I don't know how any of this is going to work. And I'm still up in the air about Guy Ritchie's Aladdin. None of this makes sense to me. However, if it's pulled off and people are able to walk away from that, like, Not hating Will is a win. Enjoying Will is a bigger win, and I think that will help him do whatever the hell he wants after that and maybe reignite some of that.
Does not want to take a giant leak on the legacy of the character. Like, as long as people don't feel like he's taking a leak on the portrayal of the character that they know and love, I think they'll be okay. And Disney's proven, you know, proof of Beauty and the Beast, where, you know, you had a defined idea of that story in those characters, that they know how to kind of make that transition. No one really cared about Maleficent, and we're going to get a Maleficent 2, and that's great for Angelina Jolie. But not a lot of people grew up with, you know, the people who grew up with Sleeping Beauty were people who are already older anyway. It's like the Mary Poppins sequel. Like, the person that movie is made for is in their 60s and 70s. It's not really something that's going to grab the attention of a 13 or a 10-year-old right now.
Well, I mean, you can say that, but Cinderella works, and that is the same.
Work? Like, they opened it in March, it made good money, but there wasn't, like, a cultural, like, conversation around it. There wasn't a lot of buzz. It was just, oh, look, Kenneth Branagh can do a very good period piece that's very colorful and bold.
Of the ones they've made so far, Cinderella is the one by far that has been that people have said is the best.
And it's the best because it rips almost beat for beat the entire animated movie without changing very much.
There's more changes than there is in Beauty and the Beast. Like, Beauty and the Beast, I think people are like, largely like, eh. Like, it made all the money because you got us right in nostalgia feels, because Beauty and the Beast is one. It's like right around my age, because I would have been
1992.
I think 91. Yeah, it's 91 because Land of 92. So I would have been 10. So you get people like me, and I have a daughter, so you get people like me and the kid, and we both know the movie, so you get us in there. Cinderella, I just, like, I've only seen it once, but when I watched it, I'm like, this is really good. Like,
yeah, well, Burr is, I mean, the guy has just signed a contract with Fox. God knows whether or not it's actually legitimate now or not, but he signed a contract with Fox to do a whole shared universe around Hercules, Poirot, and all of those movies.
That's Fox.
Fox, and they're in the middle of getting ready to prep and shoot.
Well, so that one will come out.
Yeah, you know, on the Nile, Danger on the Nile will come out. But I mean, that's right up his alley as a perfect thing for him to do and make a lot of money with. I mean, that movie came out in December. It made really good money, and it was well received by critics. So I mean, you know, Burra is one of the, like, lot solid directors that are operating today.
Let's see how much money this made. Nowhere near as much as Beauty and the Beast, so that made over a billion. This one made about 540.
And it was doing really good work numbers for March. And again, we've moved into a period now where there is no off season, where we're constantly trying to find places and.
Ken Burton produced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we'll get to our good friend Simon Kinberg and all of the many things that he has to say.
Boo hiss.
About his various and sundry future of the X-Men. But I mean, you know, I'm down with his Aladdin and where he's gonna go. As far as his Bad Boys 3, as long as you tell it Bad Boys for Life, I'm good.
You have to have that title right at this point.
Right. And, you know, that's all I really need from it. So, Chad, there was a movie. It was called The Martian. It had a director at one point named Drew Goddard. Drew Goddard has since moved on and wrote it, but could not direct it because of a movie called The Sinister Six, which never happened. And he went on, and he finally, after, you know, 6-7 years... directed another movie, Bad Times at El Royale, which was freaking awesome and wonderful and amazing because he's a brilliant writer and director. He left the project and a gentleman named Ridley Scott came on board. You know what happened with The Martian, Chad? Tell the people what happened with The Martian.
The Martian was a huge success. Made lots of money. People loved it. And that, using some parlance from another movie, was Ridley Scott's golden ticket to do whatever the hell he wanted. And he is cashing it.
And how did he cash that, use some of that capital?
Well, much to the chagrin of Neil Blomkamp, he went and decided, you know, this Alien franchise that you were going to do, let's not do that. Let me continue the stuff I'm doing over here with Prometheus. Well, Prometheus came out before The Martian. So Alien Covenant, which is the sequel to Prometheus, which is going to continue on all these stories. Let me go ahead and do that. And did he cash it in on Blade Runner 2?
He was a producer on that. He was also a producer on the aforementioned Murder on the Orient Express.
Okay, so those are mild cash-ins. Mm-hmm. Those are fine. But the ones he gets to direct, those are big cash-ins. And all, and it's Alien Covenant. Is there another one he directed between now and then? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and not to mention the dude's 80 years old.
Yeah. So he crashed and burned Alien Covenant, set Neil Blomkamp's stuff aflame, and now he's like, oh, there's still some shine on this ticket. Let me go ahead and dust this off. Here you go. I got a couple more uses on this one. So what terrible thing is he about to do now?
We're going to get a Gladiator sequel. The Best Picture winner from the year 2000 is going to get a sequel.
Okay, I'm gonna let you take this one without. I have never seen Gladiator.
Does not at all, under any circumstances, in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Name me the last Best Picture winner to get a sequel. My point exactly.
Yeah.
They are meant to be standalone pieces of art. Wait. It ranks up there on the chart of highest grossing Oscar winners for a reason. It was a action adventure, sword and sandals epic. And he, you know, Joaquin Phoenix, it turned Joaquin Phoenix off of that kind of big budget movie making for a long time, if ever. It's one of the reasons he didn't do Doctor Strange, because he had such a bad experience with Ridley on Gladiator. It launched Russell Crowe's career to the point where, you know, I think the very next year or a couple of years after, he does Beautiful Mind and actually, you know, continues to be an Oscar consideration. You know, it's a quality movie of the time. It's Ridley being in check. It's telling a historical tale, which is something he's done a lot of in his life and in his career. It's 5 million times better than Exodus: Gods and Kings. It's 500 times better than any version of the Kingdom of Heaven that you can find anywhere, because, you know, he has like 8 different versions of the damn thing. It's right with Blade Runner and the Aliens, and Alien. Those are the three movies that stand out in his canon. And he's already bastardized Alien as much as he can and burned it to the ground. And he's got one of the most brilliant visual directors working today to come in and finally do a Blade Runner sequel that was as good as the original and received tons of critical praise, but just like the original, didn't receive a lot of box office receipts. So now this is, if you look at his career as the Holy Trinity, this is the last of the Trinity that he hasn't touched. You know, Zack Snyder, for all of his faults, was smart enough to understand that what you didn't do was go back and tell the continuation of a historical epic. There is a, you know, he goes off and he does Man of Steel. In the middle of production, or getting ready on production of Dawn of Justice, they come to him and talk to him about doing a 300 sequel. He says, no, but I have this other idea. I'll produce, I'll front up some of the money, and, you know, we can do it this way. There were a number of problems with it. First of all, the, you know, 300 really lent itself to the 3D of the time. That didn't work, was not a thing by the time Rise of the Empire came out. There was the fact that you couldn't get Gerard Butler back at the time because he was still an A-lister. Now he's doing crap of, like, you know, running around in a submarine movie that, you know, doesn't get any publicity and gets $0 at the box office. You know, he understood that if you were going to do that, you needed to tell the prequel. You needed to tell the backstory of how you get to there. Because in and of itself, 300 is a person standing, recounting the tale of a great battle to prepare them for a even bigger battle. And so it's already someone recollecting events from the past. So he understood that the smart way to go about it was telling the story of how we got there. Prequels are inherently tricky, as everybody knows, yada yada. Didn't work out. This guy's gonna go and do a sequel to a movie that has a definitive end.
I'm like, didn't he die? Didn't everybody die?
For the most part. It's a very, like, if you want to do another movie set in ancient Rome and set in that culture, and you have a story idea that's of quality and you have writers to help you, that's fine. But continuing on with the story of Maximus and his family and his son and you know, Nero and all of the rest of it, that there's no need to do that. You can still tell a story set in ancient Rome and do a period piece without attaching the Gladiator name to it or continuing on any dangling story threads that may have existed from, by the time this movie comes out, 20 or 21 years ago. I mean, I'm a staunch defender of Robin Hood, of his Robin Hood movie with Russell Crowe.
I forgot about that.
I actually think it's a pretty decent Robin Hood movie, and it's going to be, to me, far superior than that crap we're going to get with Ty Egerton, that is the birth of the Robin Hood shared universe that somebody got paid $1.5 million to do.
That's the one we kept making the joke about.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on my money for the General Mills cereal shared universe where all of the different serial mascots get their own movie.
But that,
that could actually work. I think that has a better chance of working than what we're about to get.
Look forward to that Little John movie. I'm sure, and the Friar Tuck movie. I'm sure those will be big box office smashes.
So they're going to give Jamie Foxx, the only black dude in England, his own solo movie in the shared universe. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Whoever came up with this, I hope you took the money and ran. Right all the way out. And we're like, wait. But then think about it. Like, maybe I should go back because they took this and they got this far. What else can I sell?
It was probably the same guy who pitched the story about Will Smith voicing a bird that get a spy that gets turned into a bird.
But that's a kid's movie. I can forgive that. You can make any kind of crap a kid's movie. I just have to slog through because I'm a parent. This is for real. This is live action.
With big budget.
It's a PG-13 movie, which means you cut off the kids automatically. Unless it's got like capes and superheroes, PG-13 is like, I don't know. Yeah, this. Like somebody took their dog out, scooped up what happened on the walk in a paper bag, tied it up, lit it on fire, just tossed it out there. That's what this is about to be.
And like I said, I'm a staunch defender of his Robin Hood movie. Like, I think it's actually a pretty decent retelling. And mainly, it's because Cate Blanchett is a tour de force in anything that she does. And this is a woman who literally, I'm waiting, I don't know if we'll ever get it, but she's done two Elizabeth movies. I need there's enough of her early life that if you wanted to go and do that while she's still young enough, you could get away with it. But, like, that's not a bad movie. And it leaves you in a place where you could go and you could pick up and you could keep going. The problem is that Robin Hood movie was dead on arrival and it's not universally loved, and so he's not going to go back and try and do that. Like I said, there is absolutely under no circumstances any reason that you have to attach the Gladiator name and brand to a Ridley Scott movie about ancient Rome. None. You can even play in a completely different era. I mean, the Roman Empire spans over 800-year period. There's plenty of time in there to go and play around in. We don't have to keep going back to the same parts.
No, Ridley's getting up there. I think he's just trying to play out his hits. Like, let me do this with this thing people love, and maybe they'll love me again. Going through this whole conversation, the only thing I can think is, this is all Sony's fault for bastardizing Spider-Man and having Drew Goddard lead the Martian. Because if he doesn't lead the Martian, we're not having none of this.
No, you're never getting a Prometheus 2.
Never.
So the last time we were on or had an abbreviated episode, we got Mr. Jim Bavada on. We'd like to again thank him for his time. But the day after we have that conversation, news drops that Mr. Kevin Feige has declared from on high that I was right. And that before 2018 ends, we will get an Avengers trailer. We have three Disney movies between now and the end of 2018. We have the one that just released this week, Nutcracker in the Four Realms, not attached to that. Although I'd argue you kind of needed to attach it to that to help the box office.
Help you out, yeah.
Okay. Then the next one is Wreck-It Ralph 2, which is Thanksgiving weekend. Then after that, you wait all the way to the end of the following month where you have Mary Poppins. So my question for you, Chad, is when in the next 90 days are we getting, the next 60 days, are we getting an Avengers trailer? And are they going to attach it to a film? Or are they just going to drop it on a random Tuesday in the middle of the afternoon?
Okay, so I have a real answer and I have a dick answer. I'm going to go on my dick answer first. So, if I'm Marvel, and I'm the pettiest human being alive, which, they have that streak in them. Mary Poppins comes out, 4 days after Aquaman does?
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm Marvel, I drive that trailer then. Because that means that trailer's going to drop before Aquaman comes out, and people will start talking about Avengers 4 instead of talking about Aquaman, and it just crap all over DC. That's what would happen if a truly petty person ran Marvel. They have their streak, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is in Wreck-It Ralph, along with
Hopefully Disney is going to give me a Mickey Mouse short in front of that, because 92 weeks from yesterday, from it's on the 18th. So it just makes sense to put a short in front of that. I doubt they will, because, you know, smart. But I'm mostly thinking the fact that, I mean, Disney has a crap ton of movies coming out next year. A bunch of big movies. We already got an Aladdin teaser. We have a Dumbo teaser. We're probably going to get another one, and that will probably be with Wreck-It Ralph 2. But then there's another little movie that will come out in July, you know, Circle of Life and all. We haven't seen Hide Nor Hair that yet. They're going to put a trailer for it. That's going to be their highlighted trailer for whatever movie they put in front of. And I've got to think that's Mary Poppins. So that leaves Avengers for Wreck-It Ralph.
Which was my thought all along. Because that Thanksgiving corridor makes sense. The November time period for the marketing campaigns for the previous two movies, Avengers movies, makes sense. The fact that Feige's now committed to getting it out before the end of the year. Kind of the collector magazines and retrospective pieces you've been seeing pop up around kind of keep that Avengers thing in the periphery. The fact that, you know, we are now a solid three months out from the dropping of the Captain Marvel trailer around Labor Day. So I think this is the time to do it. And as you've been saying for a while, Sony's got to market, mm-hmm. you know, into the Spider-Verse, and or they got to release into the Spider-Verse. And by doing so, they're going to drop
The Far From Home trailer. It's going to be with that movie. There's no doubt about that. So it just makes sense for Marvel to drop Avengers 4 before we get Far From Home.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about it. As for what a trailer needs to show, look, I'm actually actively rooting. I know this will never happen in the history of existence. And no, I'm not going to say Pepper Potts is rescue, because we all know that's coming. I want somebody to have the good gunses to actually pull off a marketing campaign where they literally just put new Avengers movie coming out May 2019 and see how many people buy tickets. Like, the general audience still needs pictures and they still need sounds and TV advertisements. But, like, if you go back and you look at the marketing campaign for Force Awakens, we really did not get all that much. Like, literally, we did not get all that much. We get the opening trailer with all the shots of all the faces and, you know, the dual blade lightsaber and the Falcon flying through Jakku. And then we don't get anything till that following April, where we get, you know, just a generalized, very tightly wound trailer. Which, by the way, JJ is seeking a mega deal. Why wouldn't he? I mean, if Overlord makes money this weekend, I'm sure he's gonna, like, hey, Netflix, you know, I can pump out as many of these as you want. But that's as close to, like, a super secretive, like, new Star Wars movie show up that I've seen. Like, I'd love for them just to literally put sometimes heroes die, sometimes heroes live. Avengers 4, you know, Avengers Reassemble 2019. Because I'm on the bandwagon of Reassemble now, even though it's a play on the original British title, which when it opened in the UK in 2012, it was Avengers Assemble.
You know why I did that, right?
Because you couldn't actually say the word?
Mm-mm. Because of the British TV show and subsequent movie, The Avengers.
The Uma Thurman movie.
Yeah, so right. To distinguish it from that, that's why I was Avengers Assemble. So, I'm firmly in your camp that they really don't need to show us anything. They could just have a title card that just flashes Avengers, whatever the next name of the movie is, coming on this date, and boom, move out the way, it's done. Because of the way marketing works, it's not going to happen.
But how do you promote a movie where half your cast is dead?
Yeah.
And one of your stars is going off like a madman and being disappointed that he won't get his match with Triple H at WrestleMania now. But, I mean, how do you promote a movie where half your people are dead?
If it were me, much like the first trailer we got for Avengers, Infinity War, keep with the soft music. My trailer would be black screen most of the time. You hear soft music, they might say a word. And I would just go
through. RDJ, voiceover.
Yep. And I would just go through and replay every clip of everybody that disappeared at the end of the next Avengers. And then the final shot is like Thanos in his new armor sitting there smiling with the gauntlet, flash off, show you what the name of the movie is. So, just to piss everybody off again, and then you don't get nothing new except for a grin at Thanos, and it'll be Thanos will return all over again. Boom. Done. That's what I would do. Quick, minimalist. Don't show anything new except for one shot. The one person you don't want to see, the son of a bitch, did everything.
Dark Knight. The very first trailer for The Dark Knight is literally...
that blue screen with the...
the blue screen with the bat signal and that conversation with Alfred about some men just want to watch the world burn.
I was simultaneously so excited yet so pissed off because there was absolutely nothing in that trailer. Not a damn thing. Just words, which are fine. The words are fine in context. It's really good in context of the movie. Watching a screen that's just blue with little bats fluttering out and you finally get the bat emblem, but nothing else. Like, dude, I want to see the Joker. That's all I want to see.
And they could and your scenario is pretty close.
Yeah, that's it. I'm going to show you this guy. You've already seen this guy. You don't like this guy. I'm going to show you his murder record. Show you that guy. I'm going to give you the title. You want to know the title? That's what you got. I ain't giving you nothing else. And I wouldn't show a goddamn thing until I got tomorrow.
Which, I mean, that was the way with the first Avengers trailer. The first Avengers trailer is attached to the back end of First Avenger.
Yeah. That's the first time I saw anything. Whole year. But that was a whole year out. And it was... It's really quick. It's really a jerky trailer. Nobody really cares about that now because, you know, it worked in the moment. And nobody really watches, like...
I remember watching the bootleg versions of that because we all knew they were coming at Comic-Con.
When we think about the end credit scenes and all the movies, everybody forgets about that one because it's just a trailer.
Well, no, it's not just a trailer. The movie ends with Cap awaking and running through Times Square and being confronted by Nick Fury.
Well, as far as end credit scenes go, it's just... Is there anything else? I think it's just that. I should not watch Captain America a couple months
back. Yeah, because it's, well, I mean, it opens with that scene of him boxing with the punching
bag. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then it launches into, you know, are you here to give me an assignment? I'm here to help you save the world. And then...
Yeah, it serves its purpose. It got everybody excited. More excited than I thought they would be, but...
And then you follow it up with the Super Bowl ad, which, you know, ends with that money shot of Tony flying up to the wormhole.
Yeah.
So... Marvel knows how to market, and it'll be interesting to see how they stick to a marketing strategy in this time period where they don't really have to. I mean,
they don't have to. At this point, for this movie, they don't have to do anything if they don't want to.
So, Chad, let's talk about Deadpool. Disney's going to buy Fox. That deal should be done by January now. Like, the approval process is moving rapidly fast, which... continues to lend credence to your idea of a phase Fantastic Four. Your thoughts on Fox putting out a TV PG or a PG-13 Deadpool to show Disney that a PG-13 Deadpool is viable?
Overall, I don't think it's necessary because I...
Will it technically add to the box office? I mean, you're not marketing it as Deadpool 2. You're marketing it as, what is this, Once Upon a Deadpool?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it will contribute to that box office. Because, I mean, when you go to the movies, I'm pretty sure the marketing is going to say Deadpool 2, PG-13 cut or something like that. But overall, I don't think it's necessary. Going into the first Deadpool, I was one of the people saying, you don't have to make it rated R. I think there's things you could do that would making the PG-13 funnier, like he's doing all of the same things, but it's being censored, and he knows it's being censored, and he comments on it. I think you can do those kind of things. And really and truly, again, I've only seen Deadpool 2 once, but mostly what they're going to do is take out the blood, take out any like gratuitous dismemberment shots, and all the F-bombs are going to be taken out.
Naked baby penis is going to have to go.
Oh, that was a thing. I knew there was something in this bottom half, but I couldn't remember what it was. Not necessarily, because the Richard Donner Superman and Man of Steel, baby penis, right there. So, you can probably get away with the baby penis. Even though maybe not, because he is like supposed to be a grown man on the top half, baby on the bottom half, and these were just true little babies, but we're too much into the weeds on that. Oh, but overall, I don't think it's necessary. I think you can put Deadpool in with minimal problems. I don't think you have to prove this to anybody. I would like to know who thinks you have to prove it to somebody and is actually spending the money to do it.
That would be a man by the name of Mr. Kinberg, who allows trailers to be put out while discussions are still ongoing about how to change release dates.
You know, if he was solely director on that movie, I could be like, okay, directors don't handle all that kind of stuff. Producers would probably have a hand on it too. But he's a goddamn producer too. No, you get no pass. None.
Credit either, because this was not a movie you wanted to make.
Kinberg is like the worst. Like, he makes my brain hurt. But anyway, Deadpool PG-13 is going to be fine. Not necessary.
You had to spend money to go add new scenes.
It's from what I read when I saw this, it's like a booking scene, and they shot it in a day.
I like the Fred Savage stuff though. I thought that was a cool
one. He does say he wants a kid there, but yeah. I'm intrigued to see, like, I want to see the new scenes and how they fiddle with this to make it PG-13, but I don't necessarily know if I'm going to the movies to do it. Maybe it's one of those times I have a whole day and I go to one and casually walk in to the Deadpool showing. Not saying that I'm doing things like that, but, you know, maybe.
Movie Pass, or as in my case, AMC Movie Pass, which will now cost more for people in New York and LA.
I saw that, but it's only like $4 more. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody that has it in LA is like, I don't see this many movies this month. It would have cost me like $140 to go see these movies. I will pay the $4.
Especially when you can see it in any format. In a IMAX ticket in LA is about $21 a pop.
Yeah, you buy one ticket, yeah. Done.
So Chad, there is a movie known as Avatar. It was an Oscar nominated film. It was called Dancing with Wolves with Blue People by some.
Dancing was worse.
So, that movie's getting sequels. Not one, not two, not three, but four sequels. All four of which are being shot in piecemeal down in Australia right now. Crazy madman James Cameron out telling people that this is a thing, and also taking Skype calls to make sure that the Terminator movie stays on track. Your thoughts are on the proposed titles leaked to the BBC for the Avatar sequels. These include such amazing titles as The Way of the Sea, The Seed Bearer, The Tolkien Writer, and The Quest for Yagana. So I have a writer, a quest, a bearer, and a sea.
How many times you've been saying that? My mind has been visualizing me running my head through this wall. And it's been rotating between that and the end of season 3 Daredevil when the Kingpin's getting his face punched in. Except it's not the Kingpin's face, it's mine. Because this is what this makes me think of. Like, I don't care. I don't care about this franchise. Like, the first movie is visually stunning. I understand its achievement in cinema that way. But other than that, it's 15 other freaking colonizing movies. I don't care. I don't care. And now this dude has decided that he's going to make four more of these. Not one, not two, not three, but four. I understand he's visionary. I understand he's working on different technologies to go give us stuff we haven't seen. I appreciate that. I want to see those technological advances. That's what made the first movie so special. I want to see those technological advances. I give it the first sequel.
But four of them? It'll be, what, 10 years between Avatar and the first one.
Oh, no, more than that, because the first, yeah, right about 10 years, because the first one's scheduled for, what, 2020 or 2021?
Somewhere around there,
yeah. And then they do 20, and I think it's 20 and 21, and they take 22 off, and they come back 23 and 24. Because he's supposed to use that year in between to kind of pick up stuff in case this thing, because there was insurance built in. The other problem of this is, and this is something I hear absolutely no one talking about, Papa Disney just bought Fox. Fox is the one who greenlighted this whole deal, and Fox is the one who cut the check for to Cameron for all of this money. Fox is on the hook for it, which means Disney is now on the hook for it.
Disney's going to break out that their pity pitch is going to come around over there and it's like, you made, Avatar made all this money. I understand they gave you four sequels. However, them 10 years, old man, you got these two. I'm going to give you these two because you already got a built-in break between three and four. I'm giving you these two. They will come out no matter what. Three and four, you got to show me something.
And that's how it should be. And that's how it should be. And if two and three fall flat on their face, then you can always put out the rest of your story in a book form or a comic book form or some other kind of way.
Well, see, I kill this franchise. I always give this franchise a hard time because I don't believe we need these sequels.
There's no franchise here. There was just a movie that promoted an environmentalist message.
You gave me four titles. This is a goddamn franchise, whether we like it or not. Again, we're still operating on the rule that until I see it, it doesn't exist. But you gave me titles, so...
Lead to the BBC in a very questionable manner, so...
I'll call you a phantom franchise. I'll give you that much. But the reason the first one is so popular, beloved, whatever you want to call it, is because of the technological achievements that we had.
Is it? Because how many people do you see cosplaying as Naboo at cons? And how many people do you see cosplaying as Na'vi on Halloween?
It is not important in the pop culture zeitgeist. Nobody cares about it that way. But when you bring it up, there will be undoubtedly somebody that says there are going to be a couple different kind of people. There will be people like me that's like, I don't care. It was pretty. It's fine. That's it. Then there will be the diehard Avatar defenders like, the movie's great, blah, blah, blah. Like, and if you question them, I was like, yeah, I just thought it was pretty. That's kind of what it devolves into. So if that's the case, I can imagine him getting away with the first sequel doing some crap we've never seen. But it was 10 years between the first one and this first sequel. So you're telling me you will give me something new in the third one that you're shooting at the same time as the second one? And I'm supposed to believe that we're going to get... Because I don't believe the story's going to hook us. I just don't.
You don't believe that it's going to be the Godfather saga of Pandora?
No. And if it is, I don't think it's going to be good. It is not going to resonate. People don't want to see big blue rabbits. They want to see the big blue rabbits on this pretty planet that does things that they've never seen on screen before. I don't care about them people. What's Sam Worthington's character in that movie? What's his
Jake
name?
Jake Sully.
Okay. What's the girl's name? What's Zoe Saldana's character's name?
Na'vi?
No. That's what she is. What's her name?
It's Kalila or something. Something I can't pronounce.
I'm asking you a question. I don't know the answer. And I don't think anybody does. Which goes to your whole, you know, not popular, not important in the pop culture zeitgeist. But I think that's what the stories are going to continue to be. People like look into stuff, but they don't retain any of the information because they don't care. And if you can't continue to hook them with the technological advances from movie to movie, it's going to fall off a cliff. So the first one, I expected, much to my displeasure, to do gangbusters. The third one will probably do decent because it's carrying over from the second one. But if the third one doesn't give you anything new, Mickey might greenlight the fourth, but that might be the end of the line.
Well, Mickey at least gave him a little bunch of money to make a theme park. So, I mean, James is good either way.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So they will give him at least two because, like, oh, yeah, just load your stuff up in Animal Kingdom. Just come on. Oh, yeah, he'll get two.
I mean, that's kind of been intimated by Cameron himself that that was the plan, was like, do two and then see where you stand, which is not too different from Lord of the Rings, where you made one complete movie, shot bits and pieces of the other two. So we'll see. We'll see what Mr. Cameron has up his sleeve, because I'm assuming there will be a Comic-Con panel next year, because he has to present this thing somewhere. And yeah. even if it's at a tech convention, he has to show something somewhere. And we've heard for a decade now that the first film is all of underwater and all about the oceans of Pandora. So, you know, I wouldn't shoot so high as to, like, mimic the Godfather trilogy, but, you know, that's just me. Cameron's a bold dude. He has his own set of brass knuckles that he brings to any fight.
Yeah.
Man made a movie about the Titanic disaster in which we all knew the goddamn ship was going to sink, and it still made a whole bunch of money.
I don't understand that. I never will.
Yes. So, Chad, let's move on to our final thing for this evening. Ewan McGregor is a beloved person in the cinematic universes. People continue to clamor for a Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone movie, even though we saw the Boba Fett movie finally gratefully die a painful death this week. Ewan McGregor has been cast in a DC movie as Black Mask. You know what movie he was cast in?
Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey. The Harley Quinn movie that is Margot Robbie produced, which has a female cast and a female lineup, and is on the fast track to being made. Your thoughts, sir, on Ewan McGregor entering the DCEU as this particular villain at this particular point in time?
We never actually talked about the casting for this movie, did we?
No, because Jim, you know, mentioned it in that grouping of things that Warner Brothers has going on with DC.
I'll bring it up briefly just because I like to piss people off, and there's something to be pissed off about this, because Black Canary is actually black and people don't like it. So we have Black Canary, Harley Quinn, and Black Canary, who's going to be played by Jurnee Smollett. We have Huntress, who is played by somebody that I know and I cannot remember her name, and I will look it up in a minute. I apologize. Renee Montoya from, if you've seen the old Batman cartoon, she's in that. It's going to be played by, damn it, I know her name, and Rosie Perez. Rosie Perez, which has some people in the uproar because Rosie Perez is in her 50s, and Renee Montoya is normally younger. But
you play with those kind of things.
Yeah. And I like the casting, so booty y'all. So when they had this casting, they were saying they were looking for a Ewan McGregor type for Black Mask. Like, okay, I like the sound of that. If it was Ewan McGregor, I'd be good with that. Lo and behold, looks like it's going to be Ewan McGregor. So, I am good with that. For those that don't know, Black Mask is a gangster in Gotham City.
Portrayed in Gotham.
Is he in Gotham?
He was the very first season, yeah.
I don't watch Gotham. It's like a raging dumpster fire that just keeps living on.
It's the final season.
Thank God. But yeah, he has, like his name, he has a black skull mask. Think of the Red Skull, but it's all black. I don't know much about him outside of stuff with, if you've seen Batman Under the Red Hood, the cartoon, he's prominent in that. That's mostly what I know about him. So I think Ewan can play that kind of maniacal, psychotic asshole, which might be a change for some people that only know him as Obi-Wan and or like Christopher Robin, like, you know, he's nice and meek and does the right things, and Black Mask is not that. He is not. So I think it's good casting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not so sure I'm looking forward to the rating of this movie, but I like everything I've heard about the cast so far.
I feel like Margot Robbie has the finger on her on the pulse. The R rating is something that she dwells in, does well in. I mean, it's pretty much been most of her filmography. I mean, PG-13 is where I think you should stay for a Harley Quinn movie and for a Birds of Prey movie especially, which is going to be geared toward young women. But, I mean, if you want to do an R rating, it's you could easily do that movie PG-13 and release an R-rated cut after that's going to make you money. The problem is, with doing those kind of things now, is The home video market has dried up and physical media is not a thing anymore, so releasing, you know, secondary and tertiary cuts of films is not a thing anymore. But, I mean, it's going to be interesting to me to see what happens and where they go from here. And you know, they're going to get through Aquaman, the whole deal there, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody in here. But
get through Aquaman, you got Shazam next year, Wonder Woman 2020, Wonder Woman in 2020, and you know, you're spacing things out and you're rebuilding yourself.
I would hope Aquaman is more than just a get through movie.
No, I think you are still holding out hope that you can keep the Jason Momoa Dubrow Aquaman alive. The issue is, why do you have to keep that version of the character alive when the only thing that works right now in this universe is Wonder Woman? And Henry Cavill is, you know, teetering on the edge of not already being exorcised from the whole thing. We know Affleck's done. Like, you know, it just, again, they are such a mess over there with their DC stuff that it's just, it's what we all like and admire about, you know, about Marvel. The funniest thing in the world to me the other day, I thought about it, was I rewatched, because I'm a nerd, I rewatched Feige's interviews that he did at the theater after the presentation, where they were asking him all kinds of questions. You want to know what one of the first questions he was asked was? Was this a response to DC putting their slate out 2 weeks ago on a conference call? And he was like, no, we had planned to do this at San Diego, but not everything was firmed up yet. We hadn't cast Chaswick yet. We hadn't cast Benedict. Right. Obviously, the rumors at the time were they were going after Joaquin. So we wanted to wait until we had everything firmed up. And I don't think we'll ever get anything like that again, just simply because what we heard at the time and what Kevin has said in interviews since, which is, hey, we screwed up because we told you the path. And therefore, when Joss Whedon has an Avengers movie coming out, it's October, and you have the Avengers movie coming out in May, and you just announced that there's going to be, you know, Avengers Infinity War Parts 1 and 2 in 2018, 2019, and all of these other movies in between, I'm not going to emotionally invest in whether or not, you know, Ultron's going to destroy everybody. And Whedon felt very undercut. We heard that at the time of the press conference. And it's something that Feige has cited in press junkets as the reason they haven't come out and laid out all of the movies that are attached to all of the dates that they already have staked out through 2024, because he doesn't want to lay the plan out. We can put pieces together. There are things that we know are in the works. The Black Widow movie is all but a done deal. The Eternals is all but a done deal. It would have been Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is a done deal, but that's off the table now because of the confusion and craziness with James. But that was going to be your lineup for 2020. And now, instead of three movies, you're only going to release two in 2020, and you allow Wonder Woman to take that summer slot. But, you know, Marvel is so organized and so driven down a path that they know where they're going. And to see DC kind of just hodgepodging it, and you know, we'll do a Suicide Squad sequel, and we'll reboot it with James Gunn. And we need a Birds of Prey movie that can be this female-led thing, but we're going to make it R-rated so less females can go see it and be empowered by it. And we can make this the Batman, but it's not going to be a year one adaptation. We're not sure what it's going to be. You know, we're not going to do a Man of Steel 2. We're not going to have Superman at all. We're going to bank on Shazam being this lighthearted, funny, campy thing. Like, there's 500 different... We still have Dubro Aquaman over here. We've got a Flash movie that may or may not happen over here. And it's just all over the place, scattershot. And there's no through line of what you want to do with all of them. And, you know, that honestly comes from a lack of vision from a single person. And, you know, they bet all of their chips on Zach. And Zach didn't work out. And now they're behind. They're right where they were in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where they're begging Nolan to make a Justice League movie and bring his Batman into an incorporated world so they can get the jump on Marvel before Marvel does the Avengers. And Nolan tells them to go fly a kite, and they turn to Zach, and they do Man of Steel, and they're behind where Marvel comes in, does Avengers, changes the whole game, and makes their executives feel rushed. And, you know, I'm okay with the Birds of Prey movie. Again, personally, make it PG-13 so more people can see it. But, man, get a plan together. Do something. Give me an idea of where you're going. Because right now, I don't even know where the hell Wonder Woman 2 would fit into any of this.
See, here's where their problem is. I think right now they want to play everything close to the vest. They don't want to announce anything because they've had a habit of announcing things. And they're not coming true.
Three slates.
Yeah. So they don't want to announce anything ahead of
time. Remember that Cyborg movie that was coming in 2020?
Yeah.
What about that Flashpoint movie?
That's been moved like 3 or 4 times already. Gone 3 directors. Yeah. And that's why they don't want to release anything. However, like we're talking about it right now, we have no idea what they want to do. And the way things are coming out is like, I mean, we're getting a Joker movie that's supposed to be standalone before we get Wonder Woman. To me, that there's nothing wrong with Wonder Woman moving, but this Joker movie just pops out of thin air. It's happening. It's going to be here next year. While Wonder Woman...
And locking people in subway cars and breaking all kinds of SAG laws and everything else.
The movie's probably going to be good, but I have so many things with this movie. But it just looks so scattershot. But what did you do? We can't tell people stuff because then if things changes, we're going to look stupid. But nobody knows what we're doing, and they think we don't know what we're doing. So we look stupid. So what are we going to do?
Indeed. And it'll be interesting to see once Aquaman is said and done. And as you said, it's a very tricky spot to be in because there's a lot surrounding it. When Aquaman said and done, where we stand and where DC stands and where they go from there. Because the next thing on the books, I guess, would be the Shazam and then the Joker standalone movie. And that would be year 2 for 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Todd Phillips is a hell of a director, and I like the kind of edgy PTA type stuff that I've been seeing from Joaquin and from this whole thing. Kind of creeped out when you're locking extras in subway cars and forcing them to defecate themselves in between the railroad cars. But, I mean... To each his own. This is a continuity in a universe that had Jared Leto sending dead rats to his coworkers. So, you know, to each his own. I don't know, man. Let's see where we are after Aquaman, and go from there. I'm excited because right now the most stable shared universe in all of existence outside of Marvel is the Godzilla franchise. And I am so ready as we continue to get, you know, Adam Skarsgård, being added to the Kong versus Godzilla cast. You know, getting ready to see Millie Bobby Brown in something outside of Stranger Things. That trailer looked absolutely stunning for Gods of Monsters. We're probably going to get another one here in the holiday season. I wouldn't be surprised if it's attached to Aquaman because we are in that May. Mm-hmm. So that is going to come. And it'll be really interesting to, again, see there where everything stands, because Godzilla only comes out when forces of nature are set out of balance. The Mutos were put down by him. He went back in the sea. We know that Kong was growing as a young pup on Skull Island when, you know, Brie Larson and Tom Hiddleston were there battling Sam Jackson. And we also know that he was left on the island. Mm-hmm. We know that Monarch is a thing, and that Monarch clearly understood that Kong was out there. They understood that Kong was out there because of Godzilla's attack on the ship earlier. It made them aware that these giant monsters could be around. And so they sought after Skull Island for that reason, John Goodman's character being a representative of Monarch. And the post-credit stinger for that movie is, in fact, Brie Larson and Tom Hiddleston sitting in Monarch headquarters being debriefed and being shown an image of Godzilla meeting, you know, his three main counterparts. the information that we've gotten has been that basically a rogue scientist type person, that Monarch knows where all these three, these other creatures are, that somehow they're going to be defrosted and allowed out, and then some kind of global warming, global venturist, you know, purge type idea, and that Godzilla, once they are released, Godzilla will have to come back out to bring balance back. What's interesting about that idea is, A, it's going to be awesome to see his three main protagonists on screen with people who actually give a crap about how to do them properly. The other part of it, too, is after that's done and all three of them are defeated, then you get to Kong. And where is Kong? Because Kong is sitting on Skull Island as a kid in the 70s. And this is a modern-day telling of Godzilla.
He should be old.
He should be older, he should be bigger, but how does he get off the damn island?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to do the whole traditional peer, Pete Jackson. We're not going to do the whole Pete Jackson thing. We're not going to do the May Young, the May whatever name, May West thing. We're not going to do the whole Naomi Watts, you know, grabbing him off the island and taking her up and going up the Statue of Liberty and all of that. We're not going to do that. So Monarch's the only people who know about Skull Island, who know about, you know, Kong. So how does he get off the island, and how do they meet? And we know next, they're about to start filming, and we know absolutely nothing about this film, because it is going to be required to know what's happening
in
King of the Monsters. So I'm really interested and really excited about that. So that'll about do it for this week's episode. We are glad that you are still with us, and we are glad that we were able to sit down together and finally do a full-fledged episode. Again, we thank Jim for reaching out to us and giving us with his time, and we look forward to talking with him again before 2018 is out, because we'll have a Avengers trailer to talk about, and we just look forward to that. Be sure to like us on iTunes, follow our Twitter feed. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mitch Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.